I'm Jason Herterick, and this is Discomfort Zone, part of the Invisible Not Broken podcast network. It's Disability Pride Month. To celebrate, I'm kicking off a four-part series called Caring in a Crisis, stories of how the disability community is being impacted by COVID-19. I produced this series in collaboration with DNext Accessible Media Lab, a lab run by media artists with disabilities. The stories you'll hear are all based in Toronto, but many of the same narratives are playing out across the globe.
My name is Melissa Graham. I am a person with a physical disability that I've had my whole life. I use attendant services and I live in Toronto. Personal support workers, they help people who with activities of daily living, so things like showering and undressing and things that make it virtually impossible to social distance.
How often do you usually receive home care?
For me, it's once a day, which is a bit unusual for people on our program, but that's what my needs are. Mainly, they help me with my morning routine and getting ready for the day, and then they also help me with some activities like laundry and meal preparation and things like that. The person who needs the assistance, their home, is the attendant's work environment. So the nature of that means that even as employer to employee, you tend to be a little more involved in the person's day-to-day life. I know that one of my attendants has a son. I know his name. I know he goes to school. She tells me if he gets good grades or does really well. And you get to have like those kind of conversations with people, and you get to know them in a more intimate way. I've also gone through some really difficult personal times, and my attendants were there through all of that. Not quite sure how I would have got through those experiences without them. They were really difficult to deal with emotionally as well as physically, so I honestly don't know how I would have got through those moments.
With the global stress of the pandemic, this emotional support goes both ways.
There are moments where, you know, we kind of take a pause and talk about how it's affecting each other every once in a while because it's affecting us. Like the fact that we suddenly have to wear gloves and masks around each other is strange.
The threat of COVID-19 became very real early in the pandemic for both Melissa and her main attendant.
I had some kind of cold-like symptoms. And I called my doctor's office and they said it was probably the flu. And I had an attendant around that point who had also been sick and I needed to replace her briefly.
Her attendant worked for her 5 days a week, so she desperately needed a replacement. But during COVID, attendants have been in short supply.
Like normally I have 3 backup staff and suddenly I found myself without any of them. One had a new baby in the home, her granddaughter, so she wasn't working as an attendant for anyone. Another one had gone to live with family because she couldn't pay rent while COVID was happening because she didn't have any other work. And the third was actually quarantined at the time. She ended up not having the virus, but did work with someone whose family member had it. So I suddenly found myself without one of my main attendants and with no backup. So I went on Facebook actually and was lucky enough to find someone through Facebook, and that worked out really well. But for that day in particular, I was pretty stressed out.
Melissa and her attendant only had mild symptoms that disappeared within a few days. They weren't tested for COVID, so it's unclear if they ever had it. Have you and your attendants developed any safety protocols in the event that one or more of you catches the virus?
We should. I can't say that I've specifically discussed here's what we're going to do. I haven't really had that discussion probably as well as I should. Because I've kind of assumed I'm not going to get it because I don't really leave, but It's also really hard to have that discussion. You know, it's hard to talk about what if one of us gets sick. It's not something that's easy to think about, I think, for people. I think what I would probably do is limit my contact with them, for sure. And I have enough mobility that I could probably do that for a little bit. Like, it would depend on a lot of variables, like how sick I got and a lot of different things. Because I have enough mobility that I can at least get out of my bed. And those kind of things, like, if I really needed to survive for a few days, I could probably find creative and not necessarily safe solutions to that.
Besides your experience at the end of March, how have you felt about your safety during the pandemic?
I don't leave my apartment very much. I'll just say I make a point of leaving my apartment once a week just to get out of here and go outside. But in general, I don't leave because I feel safer if I don't leave. The degree to which people respond to social distancing rules in my community varies. Sometimes people are really great about it and they respect the social distancing rules and they're using, you know, masks and gloves. And sometimes you can go outside and nobody is using any of that. And as a person who uses a wheelchair, I feel a particular risk around that because I have to touch things. I have to touch buttons. I have to go into elevators. I have to, you know, and then I go from touching those things to touching my chair. So there is a little more concern there. Now, I'm fortunate that my disability doesn't directly impact my respiratory system. I don't have anything physically with me that would put me at any higher risk than anybody else.
In other words, Melissa is at a higher risk of contracting the virus, but not necessarily at a higher risk of severe illness from it. Like many of us, Melissa is working from home these days. That's something she couldn't do without the support from her attendants.
Having an attendant in my life means that I can do my job and support other people in the community. So it doesn't just stop at me, because if they're not there, then I can't do the work that I do. Same with other people. If their attendants were there, they couldn't do the work they do, and it would become a domino effect.
Can you tell me what you do for work?
I work for the Direct Funding Program at the Center for Independent Living in Toronto.
Direct Funding is the same program that provides attendant services for Melissa. Full disclosure, the Center for Independent Living in Toronto is a partnership supporter of the Media Lab I'm producing this story with.
But what I mainly do is work with self-managers, self-managers being participants on the program, in the Toronto area. Typically what I do is I'm helping people getting started on the program, which is really great, and I enjoy doing that. Or I'm helping people with like changes in their needs.
And how has the pandemic impacted your work?
It's impacted us quite a bit. We've never experienced anything like this, as I'm sure the whole world hasn't. Toronto is probably the hardest hit city in Ontario right now. So I think out of all the self-managers across the province, I think we're feeling the pandemic a bit more intensely than, say, rural Northern Ontario, for example. And that's definitely reflected in my work. There's a much greater state of crisis for people that can pop up at any time, because all of a sudden, you know, what if my attendant becomes positive for COVID, or, you know, what do I do if I can't find any master gloves for my attendant, which is a big problem that people are having right now? Or what if all my attendants work in a nursing home and I suddenly find, or long-term care, and I suddenly find that I have no staff? We're dealing with questions that, frankly, we've never had to deal with before. I worked with a self-manager recently who passed away. But before she passed away, she was in hospital. And the only person that she had in that hospital with her for weeks was her direct funding attendant. And the self-manager did not have the virus, but she had something else that was impacting her breathing and had a lot of difficulty communicating because of that. And, you know, if it weren't for that attendant being there, I don't know if this person would have been alone, would have been able to connect with anyone. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful that she had that way of connecting with us. And of course, it's really sad that she passed away. But I worry about people that wind up in those situations and wind up in the hospital alone because of this virus. And I can speak for myself in non-pandemic times, being a disabled person in a hospital by yourself is really scary, even if you're not deathly ill. There's not enough nurses at the best of times to help you get to your chair if you need it, or help you get to a washroom if you need it, or those basic human things. I know of a person in community with an intellectual disability who was denied access to an attendant and to actually even a family member to assist him. And I actually ended up giving that person's family the contact information for their MPP and getting their MPP involved, because it was a really horrendous situation. And that's just like one situation that I know of personally. People who make emergency plans need to incorporate accessibility into those plans. People should not have to be fighting right now to have their attendants in hospital with them. It's something our program allowed, it's something the hospitals generally allow, but because of the pandemic, people have had to advocate for that more so than they normally would.
During your daily work life nowadays, you're fielding a lot of calls related to COVID-19, as well as dealing with your own fears around it. Has that impacted your mental health at all?
Yeah, I would say it has. Because the thing, too, so as a person with a disability who works for the program, a lot of the situations that self-managers find themselves in are situations that I could potentially also be in. So you feel that. And I'm really lucky that I have attendants that basically live down the road from me. And there's not a whole lot of barriers for them as far as getting to me. They don't have to worry about taking transit or things like that. So I feel relatively safe. But as somebody who, until very recently, didn't live alone, I can't imagine what it would be like to feel like you're all on your own with this. And I try to practice like good self-care and not take all of this on, but it's really, really difficult. And especially in the early days of it too, when all of my calls would be about COVID, all of them. And sometimes being on the phone for an hour with people, not necessarily because they needed anything urgently, just because they were scared and needed someone to talk to because they didn't know what to do. There are people on this program who, if they got COVID, would not necessarily be able to fight it off because of the impairments they have to their respiratory systems. So for them, I think COVID-19 feels like much more of a threat than it would be for the average person. So taking on all that on every day, on top of like being socially distanced myself, and you know, only having communication with people through the phone or video or my attendants, it does get intense.
Do you have any recommendations on how the government could ensure that you and other persons with disabilities are provided with safe and adequate care during the pandemic?
I have a pile of. I think one of the first things we realized is that people with disabilities weren't getting information in the same way that everyone else was, and information that was specific to their needs. When I say information, it's like, okay, so people wanted to know like what protection should they be taking, what was reasonable and what was like, what would be considered a reasonable everyday precaution and what would be considered high level precautions, like if you actually were sick. There was a lot of questions that people had. And for a program like ours, so direct funding has about 1,000 people across the province, which is awesome. But compared to the level of need for PPE province-wide, like in hospitals and long-term care and all those things, from the perspective of the government, we're pretty tiny. So it's, I think, management and direct funding in it. So I've had to do a lot of work around amplifying that voice. But they shouldn't have to do that. They shouldn't have to do that. So I think overall recognition of the disability community having that need is something that's really important. And the importance of PSWs, I think PSWs too have been underpaid for a very long time. And we know that. And we're operating with the restrictions of government around that. I think, I hope that the pandemic pay that the government put in place is something that stays, because PSWs and attendants deserve that. I know for years, disability community has been saying, we need better access to groceries, we need better access to housing. And it's only now, when we're in a crisis that affects everyone, that these things are just starting to be recognized. And we don't even know if this recognition is going to continue. You know, we might end up in a situation where our governments try to come back and say, well, we spent all this money during the pandemic. We need to pull back now. And I don't think we're in a position to actually be able to safely pull back. And I don't think we should.
Are there any lessons that we can learn from the pandemic that you hope will create change in a post-pandemic world?
I think we need to really reconsider how we look at what important roles in our society are and how we support people doing those jobs and doing those work and how decisions get made, so that we can have a more inclusive society and a society that values people, that make society work. The working from home piece, I think, has been really critical for the community too. A lot of people have been told that they can't be hired at a place because we can't accommodate you working from home. And I think that's something that could be challenged now in a lot of workplaces, because suddenly when it's everybody's need and it's not just the need of disability community, the business world has found a way to accommodate the need to work from home.
So a non-disabled person might be listening to this and thinking, why should I care about whether or not the needs of people with disabilities are met during the pandemic? It doesn't impact me. What would you say to that person?
I would ask them how they know it doesn't impact them, because people with disabilities make up 20% of the population, and most of us are not visible with our disabilities. So it's like, how do you know it doesn't impact you? How do you know that the person you're working with doesn't have someone with a disability in their family that they might be coming home to, that might be at risk of getting sick? A really good example actually is my mom. My mom has an invisible disability. She has she's immunocompromised to a certain extent, and she was working in a grocery store in Newfoundland, and she's within that age range that's considered high risk. But to look at her, you wouldn't know that she's at any higher risk than anyone else. And her employer is putting a lot of pressure on her to stay. And she felt like a community pressure to stay because people were thanking her for staying at her job. And it was my sister and I that had to sit her down and be like, you know, this isn't really safe for you anymore. So my point is that you don't really know that this doesn't affect viewing. It could affect somebody you know and you care about, and you might not know until it's too late. So even if you don't think you know someone in the disability community who this directly impacts, chances are you're not too many degrees away from someone who is directly connected with somebody with a disability.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Melissa, and I hope that you continue to be safe and healthy.
You as well. Thank you for this. This is great.
When she's not focusing on attendant services, Melissa is the lead organizer of the annual Toronto Disability Pride March. You can find out more about the march at tdpm.org. Next week on Discomfort Zone, exploring the other side of personal care.
You know, after caring for my mom for so many years, I realized that caregiving was my passion.
An advocate exposes the gaps in a broken system.
If this is that serious and we're sending these inspectors in hazmat suits, why aren't our healthcare professionals protected like that?
A daughter afraid of exposing her family.
My biggest concern would be my mom here at home because she is so immunosuppressed after her lung transplants that essentially this COVID-19 would take her life.
Thank you for listening. Caring in a Crisis was written, hosted, and sound designed by me, Jason Herderick. My associate producer is Rahima Mula. Audio engineer is Justin Meriden. Video editor is Rayhan Hussein. This series is a collaboration between Discomfort Zone Podcast and DNext Accessible Media Lab. DNext is run in partnership support of the Center for Independent Living in Toronto. A special thanks to the Ontario Trillium Foundation for providing financial support for DNext. You can subscribe to Discomfort Zone on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you like the show, it would be a huge help if you could leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It'll help other listeners find my show. If you'd like to get in touch with me, send me an email at feedback@discomfort.fm. My handle on social media is DZone Podcast. I'm active on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you next week.